Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Hey, buddy, welcome back to, well, welcome again to This Life, Bob.
This Life, Bob Forrest, and, Dr. Drew.
Fred Stoller had so much fun last time. We asked him to come back again.
Yeah, I just like
because he's a celebrity rehab expert.
Little did we know.
Sort of. I would get some of them mixed up. Like there was the sex one, and then there was one guy who died, but he was on the Fit Club.
Jeff Conway.
Joey. He was on. He was on.
Cherry Pie, the group.
John.
Lane.
Janie Lane. John Rowan. Why was he? What was he on?
He was on Celebrity Fit Club, and he sadly died. So I assumed when he died, it was your VH1 show. Janie Lane was his name. He looked like
James Spader. An old friend of mine.
That was sad.
Alcoholism. But anyway, so you're focused on the dead. I'm focused on the living. So here's the thing.
Yeah, let's talk about how.
Here's the thing. This is an idea that we had. This Life podcast, and the fact is, we need your help. If you like this, tell your friends about it. We're going to talk. We're going to help. We're going to talk about our own lives in this kind of free-for-all kind of way that I believe how love lines used to be. Yeah. That's what I'm modeling it after.
That's true. It kind of was that.
It was that because you'd have people on like and talk about anything and talk about whatever's going on, but always bring it back to either with love lines. It was music and advice.
Yeah.
Here it's about chaos and
it's philosophy.
Chaos and nothing.
You know, what's going on in the, you know, here and now.
Because that's what it feels like to be in America now. It feels like chaos and nothingness. And so if you're feeling like us and you want to talk to us, you want to send in emails, you want to just hear or listen or know that there's other people here in this society confused, but still we know a lot of shit about a lot of shit. That's what I feel.
Yeah.
Like I know a lot of shit and I'm just confused the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, in a way, knowing what we know makes it worse because we're seeing all the pathologies blend into the historical moment.
But it's a hybrid.
Yeah.
But it's a hybrid.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like before.
No.
Because I knew how to deal with what was before.
Yeah.
This is a hybrid of inequality and political correctness and justice and narcissistic parents extensions of it's just chaos.
And then what's going on in the college campuses now is so hard to.
There's not much different of what's going on in the rehabs and what's going on in the college campuses.
That's interesting.
So they, I swear to God, I watch the news and I see you're protesting against what?
Yeah.
What do you want?
Yeah. That's always been my thing. What's the end game?
They
want
to live in a world that doesn't exist, Drew.
No, the world of their narcissistic perfection. Well, they want to be the brain in the vat, Bob.
Well, guess what? The drug addict kids I deal with are more honest and pure. The parents are like the students at the college.
Yeah, I could see
that. They live in delusion of what real life
is. Yeah, how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, and he's supposed to be doing this.
You're right. I experience that a lot when people lack of willingness to be biological even. Because no one, you know, we're somewhere.
Or age. They don't want to age.
Yeah, well, that's part of being biological.
Don't want to be in pain. Like,
That's part of being biological. I mean, it's just the crazy thing. We've like disavowed our what we are.
Well, disconnected, desensitized with always on our phones or at Facebook. So maybe that's a lot
of
the
disconnect. An uplifting podcast. Anybody
wants to? But I think that there's a lot of us that are kind of sane that see it as insane, but you're scared to say anything.
Yeah, everyone's afraid to say anything about anything.
Well, what I say to the parents of these 26-year-old kids that I deal with, like, why do you fucking care? You're the one giving them money and like paying for all this shit. If
26.
They don't want it, then just go on a trip.
But they can't. I think part of it is they can't believe.
You know what I mean?
No, but listen, they can't believe what they've created or what the child has become. They can't accept it.
Society helped create it.
No, but they
social
can't.
Media,
whatever
helps
it is,
create
the parent can't accept it. It's just unacceptable.
But
to them
unless
that this
they let the children learn, they will never learn. And rehab's not going to teach them. And obviously, a university where the president resigns because she said something that wasn't even wrong at Claremont Colleges, right?
Yeah.
What did she even say that was wrong?
It's not even clear, but she was accused of something sort of racist or. But the point is that, yes, the administrators are cowards, but they're, of course, getting what they deserve. They've been cultivating this in college students for decades, and now they got it.
But
here
so
it
when
is.
The kids graduate at 22 and go back home and live with their parents and there's no opportunity in life, whose fault is it then?
Right.
Whose fault is it?
If they went to that school and didn't get a good education, you mean?
No. Well, there's no jobs to get, so they didn't, they, whatever, you know, you thought was going to happen, you have a $60,000 debt and no job. And yeah. if you do get a job, it's going to be for $36,000 or $41,000 a year.
I just think so much of it's because with the education they do get, for the most part, it's not worthwhile. And I don't mean
liberal arts degree?
No, liberal arts are very good done properly. There's a thing called the zone of, oh, shit, what's the name of it? It's zone of, ah, crap. There's sort of a zone of learning. Like there's a zone of competency that everybody has, and the idea of real learning is to push that zone out, not to rehearse within the zone. You got to push kids and people out into things
but
that
I
they
have a
can't
feeling
do
the
and
zone
never done.
Is accommodating the zone of
That's
rehab
right.
is now accommodating the children.
That's right.
And university is.
That's right.
Here's an interesting thing. David Foster Wallace gave a great speech at Amherst, I think, or at Emerson.
David Wallace.
David Foster Wallace.
Water and the fish.
This
one?
Is water, right?
Yes, yes.
And here he says, you know, up until now, liberal arts degree was the idea was they're teaching you how to think.
Right.
Right. And what they should be teaching you is what to think.
No.
That's what he says.
I think you flipped it around. No, I went to college with him.
What to think about. Right?
No.
Meaning, you got to listen to This Is Water. What right. to think about. You can think about the injustice and somebody calling you Mexican.
Well, maybe
or whatever
what to think
it
about
is,
makes
you can
sense.
Think about
But you
got
to be able to think.
You've got to be able. But it's a given that people can think.
Did you read his book? Did you read, what's the big one?
Infinite Jest.
You know, I love
I
reading
read
about
half
him.
Of it. I half of
was
it.
That not the best description of pot and pot withdrawal you'd ever
yeah,
seen?
Yeah, that's when all the way up until the tennis stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, I loved that.
Yeah. He describes being in a psychiatric hospital and his drug withdrawal and stuff, and he nailed it, just nailed it.
Yeah.
You know, there's another book called The Asylum or something that somebody just sent me, and it's about alcohol treatment in the 30s. It's fantastic. It's like this. It was Lost
Belladonna.
In Cetus.
Belladonna.
No, it's TLC.
Oh, TLC.
Yeah, yeah, I just love. It's just Lost.
What
in
is Infinite Jest? I love reading about David Foster Wallace, but see a 1,000-page book. I go.
It's a 1,200-page book with 400-page notes, and Nate the man has read the entire thing.
Wow, Nate, our engineer. Well done.
Is
Nate.
It?
I read the first 300 pages.
Is but, it just going on a million tangents and memoir?
Oh yeah,
it
yeah.
switches
oh,
different yeah. times. Yeah, different times in his life. But really, we're taught now to think about self is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And that's what he's saying in the lecture. Think about yourself and, you know, and assume about everyone else.
He's saying that?
That's
how
society
taught.
Is
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
That we're not thinking in terms of what we actually know, the facts that we know. We're working a lot on assumption and what he calls a preset, right? Meaning,
tempted to pull up that lecture.
You got to see it.
It's a commencement speech, right?
It's a default setting. He calls it default
yeah.
setting that rich people are bad. Default setting
yeah.
that everything is equal. Default setting that there's no racism. Default setting that you know, and the default setting keeps changing by people like Donald Trump. Now everybody's able to say, well, I don't know if I want Muslims living in America, right?
Yeah.
And it all of a sudden will become a default setting.
What was the?
It's
was
called This Is Water.
This Is Water. Yeah.
And he's saying, yes, up until this modern era, the idea was to teach you how to think. And what should be being taught now is what to think about. Because the society teaches you to think a certain way that's wrong.
It was at Kenyon College where he gave that speech. Well, I'll have to read it again during one of our breaks here.
Okay, so how do you
the way he expressed himself was,
how do you challenge the status quo?
It's, how do we, you and I, how does one, or how do
most
we?
Most people just remain silent if they disagree because you'll be bullied and badgered and called a racist.
I'm getting used to that. I mean, you speak up on anything in any way and you'll get attacked.
Well, what happens?
It doesn't all
nobody
come,
speaks
it,
up.
And by the way, it doesn't all come from the PC police. It comes just as crazily from everywhere else. You're too liberal, you're too conservative, you're too whatever. There's just anger. It's anger and frustration. That's the overarching tone. And I would argue that there's some hopelessness behind it, because there always in America was sort of a dynamism, like the future, it's going to be better and it's going to grow. And
nobody believes it anymore.
No, it's flat. I mean,
are we
flat.
Diverting ourselves with so much outrage? Like, it's easy to focus on little things we see on the internet, like Trump or this atrocity.
That may be why, because it comes, it's delivered to you. It's in your face, right. In little bites of it.
To be outraged.
Everything like Charlie Sheen did this, or yeah. This guy, why couldn't he get it together? So we're.
Oh, I was so cynical about the Charlie Sheen thing, I felt ashamed of myself.
You mean like, oh, he deserves the HIV?
Yeah.
Cynical about it, why?
I felt like, why now? Like, I just feel like there's a media lull about him. And so,
he came out, I think, because somebody wanted some
money. Was blackmailing
him.
He didn't want this out.
Yeah.
Blackmailing of what? It was never quite clear to me what was going on. I just know all of a sudden.
Lawsuits.
A guy, huh?
Lawsuits.
Well, going on Today Show is going to stop lawsuits?
Well, he wanted to divert it first, I guess.
I don't know.
You sound like someone who's a friend of his.
I worked with him twice, and I'm not a friend, but
acquaintance.
Apologist.
I worked with him. No. I just
everyone I knew who worked with him thought he was a great guy.
He was a great guy.
But he's not high or manic.
Very professional. Yeah. I expect, actually, the first time I worked on anger management, I got lucky because I got paid for the week. But then because of Sheen, I was booked for the next week for that episode because he was dealing with something we all thought was drugs. And then it extended to a third week. So I got 3 weeks of pay for one day.
Wow.
Because
he
kept going
to
the wall. So, yeah, he made me some money. But he said it was his throat, but it's probably HIV treatment he was keeping under the wraps.
No, it's probably drugs.
No, you know, I was shooting drugs and having gay sex in the 80s. A lot of my friends have HIV. They're still alive. It's a treatable disease.
Yeah.
That he felt ashamed of it. And all this stuff is like, that's like a 1990s idea. It's like he stuck in the 1990s.
Yeah.
It was weird to go on the Today Show and talk about something that's so easily treatable. It's a serious disease.
In that the HIV is easily treatable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Antivirals. Here's the deal. I have a lot of friends that have been living with HIV for over 20 years. I have a lot of friends that have died of drugs. You know what I mean?
Well, his doctor got on the Today Show and said it loud and clear. He said, I'm much more worried about his mood disorder and his drug addiction than his HIV.
Really much, said that?
He said that, yeah. I thought it was great. I repeated it and repeated it and repeated it. As he said, he goes, he's going to be fine with the HIV. Not nearly as much of a concern. His drug addiction.
Speaking
and his
of that,
disorder.
Is this the same thing? But when I heard Steven Tyler and Pam Anderson had, what did they have?
Hep C.
Doesn't that take away from the stigma that they're thriving?
Well,
so,
that's
so
curable.
I would be as scared
that's
as
curable
Hep
now.
C because...
Curable.
You're talking about things that are chronic and you live with, yeah. like.
But Hep C is curable now.
Yeah.
What?
I don't have insurance.
Fuck.
I'm getting it right now.
Insurance?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm going to be on you about that. That's insane.
So are people lax?
I was paying so much and not getting anything.
Are people more lax about Hep C
Obamacare,
and HIV?
Obamacare. Don't get me started.
Yeah.
Because they go, they're thriving. So people.
You want to know a funny thing
about risk?
Like I'm liberal, maybe. like a crazy.
Yeah.
But in fact, I'm also very honest and logical. And reason you talked about that in the last episode. So I had what's called pre-existing health care of California before Obamacare. It was great.
What is
it? It was for people with specific pre-existing health care issues that the federal government subsidized California Medi-Cal, and you got all the things you needed for that disease.
Yep.
Blood tests, viral counts, liver sonograms, because it was specific to the pre-existing illness you had.
Yep.
As soon as Obamacare they got in, they abolished that program.
Yep.
And I got regular... Jesus. What did I get? The gold PPO insurance for $560 a month. It was shit.
Yeah.
It didn't help me. They said, oh, you can't get your viral count. I get a check 2 times a year, and I get a sonogram about every 18 months. Oh, you can't get that unless you have sick. You're sick. And I said, I was talking to the nurse, and I said, I'm sick.
Yeah.
I'm feeling sick.
Yeah.
Because it's all what patient reports. It's such bullshit. The medical profession is such bullshit. Oh.
It's so, not the medical profession. It's the insurance. It's the lawyers and the insurance have done.
So if I say I feel sick, I feel lethargic, I feel tired, yes. then they have to run the test. So because, I have to lie
oh my God.
To get the health care that was being provided for me before Obamacare. I'm done.
Yeah, listen, people have fucked up health care so much I can't even talk about it.
But you understand, if I lied, I could have gotten everything that I wanted.
I understand. Well, maybe and maybe not. And it's almost impossible to get anything through, you know what I'm saying? By sick, they mean you have to be yellow and there has to be some bad stuff happening, which is crazy. But that's the way the system is run now by attorneys and insurance companies. That's yeah. That's who runs it. And that's insane. That's disastrous.
That job is to deny as hard as they
that's
can.
Right.
No, I don't know if it's to deny. It's just to make money.
Well, but right? to deny people...
Access
insurance.
Listen,
their medical.
What people don't understand is we've gotten so negative this podcast.
Take responsibility.
That the wolf is in charge of the chicken coop. There's one protector of the chickens, and that's the patients and doctors and nurses. That's it. Everything else, the lawyers and the insurance companies, those are all the wolves trying to take advantage of the chickens.
But to be on a positive other side of it, the only thing keeping the recovery business from becoming one of the most disgusting industries in America is JACO and the insurance companies. Because these people that are involved in drug treatment...
Yeah, but the cash part of it has already gone bad. It's already bad.
I know, but they're just you should imagine your worst nightmare.
I have no problem with
no. I like JACO and insurance companies in being the only oversight of drug treatment in America.
Yeah. All right, we have Kendra Jade Rossi coming in here today. Her Twitter handle is at Kendra Jade Rossi.
But I wanted to get
Kendra
to celebrity Rossi. Rehab.
Hang on,
self.
We will. Kendra is going to join us. She, of course, was in sex rehab and then the sober.
But we're
going to
go.
Her Twitter handle is at Kendra Jade Rossi. But before we go to her, Bob wanted to pick.
Okay, what's your favorite event on Celebrity Rehab, and I'll tell you what it was really going on.
So, what do you mean?
And Celebrity Rehab, like when somebody had a seizure, Mindy had a seizure, or somebody threw up, or somebody jumped off the boat, or what were some of your favorite parts of Celebrity Rehab?
Well, Dennis Rodman, I was cynical because when you, what was the other show after it? Like
Sober House.
When you're clapping, like Drew's going, yeah, he's agreeing. Like Dennis Rodman was so adamant against doing
it. He was an alcoholic.
And then, yeah, but my favorite event was, I don't know if I had a favorite event, but one of them, who was the one that left to go to a porno convention at night and that made her relapse a little bit?
Mary Carey.
Oh,
Mary
yes.
Carey.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So liked that? Or you thought that was crazy?
I don't know if I had
crazy.
A favorite event, but I just remember it was like a train wreck. So
do
I
you want to know my favorite event?
Yeah, tell me.
When Mary Carey said that she didn't like having two dicks in her ass at the same time.
That didn't go into air.
Yes, you did.
No, it didn't. You're not supposed to talk about that.
Oh.
I will tell you what it was. It was a pre-cut, you know, I was airing, showing it to her some strung out stuff.
And, sorry.
And Sasha and I are sitting in there, and Mary Carey starts crying. You're going to have to edit this all out.
She goes,
and poor, you know, I'm blanking what her real name is. We didn't call
Why
her.
Why do
right
we there. Have to edit it out? Nobody's
right,
going to
so
care.
She goes,
you can actually get Celebrity Rehab on iTunes, everybody, too, if you want to.
She started crying. She goes, I can't stand that I do all this stuff. I wouldn't put three dicks in my ass if I didn't have to. And Sasha and I are like, mm-hmm. We're like,
who will?
Like, which
patient? Are you sure they cut it out?
Positive.
Well, I saw it in the regular.
I forgot.
It just went from two dicks to three dicks, by the way.
It was three. I'll never forget it. I was like,
How would you even fit the bodies around that?
That all flashed through my mind. That's why I remember.
Which patients were the peacekeepers? Was it Rodney King?
Rodney King was good.
I liked the ones that would just keep the peace.
Rodney, yeah. Awesome.
And they really, you know, but then when they would try to say something, they would snap at them.
Sure.
But I don't know if I know a favorite event.
You just like the train wreck aspect of every episode.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was again, you answered some of my questions
well,
on
a lot
the
of
other
the
episode.
Know that most of the treatment didn't get on TV.
Because
it's on
that?
TV.
Because it's boring.
It's boring. Most of what got on TV is what was happening on the unit.
Learning how to tolerate.
Between and amongst the patients. But the treatment is quiet and deliberate and focused, and you know, it's different. Not good for TV,
right?
Fortunately,
right.
I thought so would get on TV.
I want to just pick your brain because I want to know what people really liked about it. Is it? Did you like when they were using it?
I had a love hate with it.
Yeah. Okay.
Until I met Drew, he's the greatest guy, and he is, like someone said earlier, the same guy on and off. But I would perversely like, sort of. Again, I was a jerk because I was going, that's not what real rehab is. I go, how do I know? So I was kind of getting angry, why?
It made you feel things. Yes. I think the audience felt things.
Yes, they put like Heidi Fleiss and Sizemore in the same thing. Was that a coincidence or was that trying? Yeah.
No, but just like I've said before. That
we were trying to get Heidi to do it for a long time.
Addicts all run together. And so it's common that you have people in treatment at the same time who have histories together. Because Bob
and I have histories with most of them.
Yeah, shit, he used to use with most of them, and now he's the treating professional.
So you know of the people on the show, I've used with Heidi, I've used with Tom, used with Mike. No, Jeff Conaway, I was sober with.
Jeff was trying to make him sober. Jeff was trying to 12-step him.
And so Steven Adler. And so the idea was I knew these people that were struggling, and I wanted to get them help because I felt like if you get around us, because you're going to be around us for a year or 6 or 7 months, it's good for you. And you can't really get somebody out of their embedded situation. Like, I wanted to have Courtney Love on for years. I tried to get her to do it, and she was like, I'm not going to do it. And then they offered her a lot of money, and then she thought about doing it, and then she said no. And
mostly they didn't want to do it because they knew they'd have to get sober.
Yeah.
They knew they were going to have to.
I like that they opened up their vulnerabilities. Yeah. I really like seeing when you could really crack them.
See, the problem of Charlie is he's embedded.
Right.
He's been embedded. He's got money. He's got a house. He's got a bunch of people that don't say no to him. So you can't get him out of there. He's embedded. But as things start to crack, you can start to get in there. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so as things started to crack with Heidi, with Steven, I could get in there and go, come on, come on, come on.
No, yeah, when I grew up watching the '86 Mets and just seeing Dwight Gooden.
Oh, yeah,
it just broke my heart. But
he's the greatest guy.
Yeah, so stuff like that I'm getting goosebumps. So I like things like that when you saw humanity in a lot of them.
And
Rodney King broke my heart when he died because, you know, there's just so many layers to his pathology, his abuse,
his life.
Just growing up as a black Indian in the city and then being the cause of the riots and so I just liked a love hate because some of them were very vulnerable. Some of them, I was cynical, like, was Rodman only going to the sober house because then he'd get another paycheck? So, I mean, it made me think of things like that, you know, analyzing the scenes.
But here's what I believe. If you hang out with us long enough, it's going to have a positive effect on you. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't mind that Dennis was doing it for a paycheck or wanted to do it to stay out of jail or whatever reason.
Because he was obviously not there to go by the program.
It wasn't that when we all applauded him, it wasn't that I don't believe he was truly internalizing, I'm an alcoholic, but just that he cared enough about all of us to even say that.
Well, and
really
I got to tell you, my inroads with Robin occurred during Sober House. That's when he and I really developed our relationship.
Oh, really?
I brought his mother out from Dallas, and I met with him and her. It was moving. It was crazy. And he always told me, he goes, well, you and I will have a relationship, I promise. And I did not have one until towards the end of that second show. And then he kind of blew it all out.
That's what I used to like on the show, the family visiting days.
Yeah.
And there was one sad one where someone's family didn't come. I forgot.
Yeah, it's always something like that.
So, yeah, that stuff when you...
The Mindy McCready singing at the dinner.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That was pretty heavy.
Yeah. Did she fight with someone? I forgot. What were the biggest cat fights? Who were the biggest females that didn't like each other?
Well, it was Carrie Ann with anybody.
Carrie Ann with anybody. But, you know, it was Heidi and McKenzie.
Yeah, they didn't see
pretty,
that.
Was
that's
pretty
what
bad.
I remember.
Pretty
right
bad.
In her face.
And
yeah,
and you
bad.
Know what? I knew Mac when she was using. She was a lot like Heidi.
Yeah, it's true.
No. She was a fucking,
I knew her then too.
Fuck you. Fuck
yeah.
You. And you
yeah,
know,
that's
and that,
interesting. I knew that. I, knew
I
that
remember
too.
Her dog had to be put down. And you,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But Mackenzie was sober when she came to
we
us.
We'll get Mac on the show soon.
is when
I hope so.
She's great.
You know, she's been around.
It's like casting Celebrity Rehab.
And was Gary Busey not going with the program? I forgot.
No, I ran into Gary a couple of days ago, and he came to me and hugged me and said, "Do you remember that moment when we talked? When you he and I had a moment together, and they didn't make much of it on TV, but it was a very powerful moment for me when." He saw me. I channeled sort of his dad for him a little bit, and he said he saw his dad's face on me, and he said he went out. He like dissociated. He said he's at a swamp and there are witches, and the witches are coming away from my eyes. He had this whole elaborate, and he recounted that very scene to me. We were at the Improv the other night, and I ran into him, and he went, "Oh my God, I still think about that all the time, and I've been so much better, and he's so much better." But the other thing,
he's still crazy though.
Well, he's his own kind of crazy. He's Gary crazy.
He's funny though.
But Gary has what's called an organic personality disorder because he crushed his right frontal lobe in the motorcycle accident, and Bob really helped him with that. Remember that book and everything.
Yeah.
He got a lot out of that. None of that got on TV.
I know we could get him on the show.
He's fun.
I think your show could have got a lot less hate if they had more of the follow-ups, and rather than thinking, oh, they're just there for a paycheck.
But I really believe it created feeling in people, at least people, what we did created either animosity or whatever it created, or schadenfreude, it created feeling, which most television just creates numbness.
Mm-hmm.
It created people talk to me still. It's like been off the air like 5 years. People talk to me still every couple of days about it. And ask about people or are angry. Like,
absolutely.
Like, what you guys did is fucked up. Like, why would you care about... name any other TV show that's been off the air 5 years and you see somebody that was on it and you're angry when you see them.
Well, no, not to make it about me, but my books... people sometimes... I learn not to read Amazon reviews, but once I did, oh, he's a loser. He's the one who wants to read about a guy. Or it hits a nerve because I talk a lot about isolation or my mother. Like some woman I bumped into the party, your book was depressing. Stuff about your mother, because my mother's like that. So I'd rather... You get have people be annoyed by me than it's innocuous. The Goomba's cookbook to life, or you know what I mean? Some innocuous book that I hit a nerve in people because
the skinny margarita book is not good.
No, all right, that's an exception. But I hit a nerve because I'm not trying to overcompensate and act slick. So maybe people see something in me they don't like about themselves. Like I did this movie Friend Vinny about a friendship I had with an agoraphobic guy. And it was a lot about isolation, and so you're right. If it hits a nerve, you really did
something.
That's all you can do anymore. It's only catches people's attentional mechanism, so they can direct their attention towards something and maybe learn.
I think everything is so fake, and everybody's branding. Yeah. You know what I mean? That Housewives show, you can tell like somebody sharp, like the girl that branded herself and did the skinny margaritas. She was out to brand. From the moment you got a camera rolled. And America is that. Everybody's out to
brand.
Speaking
of the Housewife show, I don't watch them, but when I did a podcast and on Facebook, I said, any questions for Dr. Drew? Someone said, and I forgot to ask it, how do you feel about, and who's the woman you mentioned before?
Oh, Jennifer Jimenez.
She's on it and drinks with a woman?
No, she doesn't drink, but they drink around her.
Taylor or whatever.
And they're all,
the
husband of that girl killed himself.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, of Taylor, what's her name?
Yeah. And that's the one that's her buddy.
Yeah.
So the point being that people mostly have animosity about branding, maybe. They get angry about people who have financial success, I think it's about as much as you can say of the Kardashians or the Housewives or the basketball. You know, Kevin Hart has a great joke about the basketball TV show.
Yeah.
That's the most false advertising of any TV show, because shouldn't it be... ex-wives of ex-basketball players.
Or it should be...
nobody in the NBA on that show. Thought
they should make the NBA rookies watch Basketball Wives. So they know to be careful.
I like that.
You know?
All right, we got to take a break. Go ahead.
I want to ask you why you speculate you've had hate from Celebrity Rehab.
A couple reasons.
Addicts create a lot of emotion about it because it's really deep in America.
It's first they go, you're exploiting these poor people.
Right.
Okay. So that assumes that, A, these people feel exploited, and I would urge them to talk to any of the patients. None of them felt exploited. They got excellent treatment. They got tons of aftercare, which no one knows about.
Right.
PH1 spent a fortune on aftercare. Number one, exploited. that it also assumes that they didn't consent to this. Yeah. We went through lengthy consent procedures. I mean, the consenting process was extraordinary to make sure that everybody signed off and really understood what they were doing, what they were getting into.
Well, the argument is they're impaired, so how could they make an informed decision?
But you could argue that how can anybody consent to any treatment
to
when they're impaired
like that?
To
doing a TV show or
but
a concert.
But that's why they had their attorneys and their family and everybody else consented as well to make sure that everybody felt good about this. And that they somehow didn't get quality treatment. They got excellent treatment, and they felt good. Every single patient went through this crazy arc, which I never would have predicted. This was the great...
I thought they'd freeze and be phony, yes. But from the moment it started, they didn't.
I want to rewatch them.
But so what happened was they came in usually for a paycheck, and I don't care. That's the other thing. How could you dare treat somebody and pay them? I don't care how they get to us. Yeah. I don't care. As long as we get them, we will make them. And if a paycheck and declaring that what they intend to do in front of people held them even more accountable. So they had this crazy arc.
It would suck if they weren't a junkie and did it for a paycheck.
Oh, no. That would be. But yeah. this crazy arc that almost every one of them went through, which is they went from being resistive and here for a paycheck to being, oh, my God, they're taking this seriously, to valuing what's happening to them, to wanting to be an inspiration to other people. The person that went through that more than anybody was Jennifer Ketchum. She came in with toothpaste tubes, and she was going to write obscenities all over the walls of the thing. She came there just to fuck the thing up. And the first thing we did, her porn name was Penny Flame. We refused to call her Penny. We go, what's your real name? Jennifer. Well, Jennifer. And she said no one ever called her Jennifer.
I remember that.
And she was like stunned by that. Aww. And then we started getting her into the treatment, and then she went all the way in and stayed with it, and obviously, now become a treatment professional. So it's a crazy thing. But
you also took abuse when somebody passed on.
Well, that's,
and
there
was, it was a very small percentage of the people.
Well, here's the thing I would say about that is that if this were called Cancer House and people died, they would not be surprised. The vast majority of cancers have a better prognosis than this disease.
Well, you
does.
Said earlier, more your friends have
you can live with
died.
HIV, you can cure cancer, a lot of cancers, but addiction people are dying of in
like
the time
crazy.
We've had this podcast.
Like crazy. But there's that. But then the other thing is the ones that die were people that got away from us. They wouldn't stay with us.
Oh, Jeff Conway left your show.
They wouldn't stay.
Obviously,
Jeff, I don't blame Jeff as much as I blame the people that treated him. His doctors put him right.
Well, he had a bunch of surgeries.
He literally was tap dancing in front of me and saying, "Oh my God, I'm recovered." And then but as soon as he could get to his doctors, boom, he had them put him right back on
back surgery.
And we used to go to his house. You don't know this. We went to his house to try to drag him out. Remember this?
Yeah. The Scientology people were there too.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Why? Since Scientology?
No.
Well, no. Everybody loved him and was trying whatever they could.
Travolta sent the Scientology.
I was like, if Scientology will help do that.
Yeah, we were like, we didn't care. We just got to get this guy away from his doctors because they keep operating.
You were ahead of your time because now TMZ with all the warts and all of everyone, and you were like, right there.
We wanted people to learn, so we hope we did. Anyway, got Kendra Ross coming in here in just a minute. She'll tell us about her experience on Sober House. We have a tremendous guest today, someone Bob and I know quite well, and many of you might as well. It's Kendra Rossi.
Hi.
There you are. Howdy,
so
howdy.
So good to see you.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it has been a long, long time.
That crazy house in whatever it was, Bronson.
Oh.
Yeah.
Steven Adler and Tom Sizemore.
There was Kendra, I know, remember this because
was Steven on that when you were on it?
He wasn't. No,
it was Tom.
We did that School of Rock thing though, and he came.
Oh, right.
That.
Yes, that was kind of cool. That's what I was telling you a previous episode. I mentioned to Bob mentioned that actors all want to be musicians and musicians all want to be actors, and I remember Tom talking to Steven Adler with such admiration, like, oh my God, man, you're the best drummer in the world.
Well, I thought I could be an actor, and John Cusack's a friend of mine, he got me in one of his movies, and I blew it so bad, the whole crew had to shut down, and I couldn't remember my lines, and you're not supposed to move because the camera's on you and all this.
What movie was it?
It's called Tapeheads. It was funny. But he was standing behind the camera like, oh, my fucking God.
Acting is really hard.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
And so, Kendra, what's going on with kids now? Talk to us. What's your life like?
Yeah, I have a 5-year-old who is intense, amazing, and he's awesome. You know, like me going to Nashville was a huge part of that, and it was only because we did that show that it was even possible. So it's actually really cool. Doing that show, actually, I'm able to be a mom.
And tell people about your husband's career, people that maybe don't know.
He does music. His name is Lucas Rossi. I'm actually sitting in his crazy little studio here. But he just put out a new song, and it's getting a lot of really good reception. Huffington Post wrote about it and all kinds of stuff. So it's pretty exciting. It's good.
Nice.
And Nashville's way better to live in, right? You can have a house. It's so much cheaper.
It's so much cheaper. It's crazy. And, you know, the funny thing is I went there because I really needed some peace at the time and some quiet. And I went there and I got a job as a server, which was insane because I needed to humble myself a little bit.
Wow.
And live kind of a quiet, normal life. And
but you can
I
live a really good life. See, being a server in L.A., you're still like homeless sleeping on somebody's couch. In Nashville, you can have a house.
Oh, yeah.
I was living in a 7,500 square foot house.
Oh, there you go, baby.
Wow. And the quality of life there is
so great.
Good.
A lot of my friends moved there.
The people are amazing. Amazing.
So many LA people I know relocated to New Orleans, Nashville, Memphis. And you can just live a quality of life that we forgot about here in this city.
Yeah.
What we were talking about
beautiful.
Earlier. We were talking about how you could run a drug treatment center by treating people, giving people reasonable salaries who are highly trained professionals, and they can have a good life, and so you can really get things properly staffed.
Yeah.
But
so when you were on Celebrity Rehab, you had common sense, and you really didn't play into everything that all the people were.
Well, I wouldn't
go
that far.
Well, you had much more common sense than, because you came a couple months later after the other show, right? And then you were in Sober House with all these maniacs, right? So on the last episode, we were talking about how the public perceived people as acting for the cameras and throwing fits and being assholes because the cameras are there. You lived with them. You know they're just assholes.
It was actually really like that all the time, which if you're trying to get sober may or may not be the best possible thing trigger wise, but it was good, man. I got a lot of love for all those people still, you know.
Do you stay in touch with anybody?
I do, actually. I talk to Jenny every once in a while, and I talk to Heidi every once in a while.
So Jennifer Ketchum is now a master's in social work candidate. Unbelievable. She's unfucking believable. We're going to get her. We're going to talk to her soon, Bob, you and I.
Yeah, is Heidi still out in Pahrump?
I think last I spoke to her, which was maybe 6 months ago or something, she had moved back to L.A. with all of her birds. And
oh, wow.
And you know who else is doing amazing, thriving, just an amazing person is Amber Smith. I don't know if you stay in touch with her.
I love Amber. I love Amber.
Oh, my God.
And even Carrie Ann, I still talk to.
No kidding. Whoa, slow down. How's Carrie Ann? I haven't heard from her in years. How's she doing?
She actually has two babies, and they do like Sunday play
dates. I saw one of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is she okay?
Yeah, she's actually pretty healthy. She's doing, I think, life coach
stuff. So what does this say about males and females? If all the females that were on Celebrity Rehab and Sober House are doing well and the males are not, what does that say about it?
What I've always said, women are more evolved. They're just better. They are better. If there's not some further evidence of that.
So the commonsensical thing, how much of being on television did you want to like stay sober and stay abstinent and try to get your shit together because you had gone public with this thing? I think the girls...
Yeah,
that mattered more to them than the boys.
Well, there's a huge responsibility in that because I know, like, even
see,
to this day,
Steven Adler, there's not a huge responsibility.
for me, I felt that.
Really, I think women take it more seriously, that social influence or that putting it out there.
Yeah.
I'm getting my shit together and I'm taking it on the road. Whereas guys will say they do that and then like a week later they're just like throwing up on themselves.
So I'm Fred. I'm butting in.
Fred Stoller.
Mindy McCready, sadly.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I had to be the downer.
Well...
Yeah.
Wait, no, but
you could edit that
but
out.
But of the people that are doing well, it's all mostly female.
No. Well, what men are doing really thriving from your alumni?
Tom.
Jason Waller.
Jason Waller, unbelievable. I'd have to see a list to get go through everybody. Steven Adler's a lot better.
Steven does, Steven's a different person, but he's not he's not what you'd call a poster child for new lifestyle.
But he's better.
He's better.
Who else is doing better?
Doc was way better, and then Doc I think Gooden. He's had a setback. I'm hoping.
But still,
right.
Doc Gooden was amazing. But setbacks are just setbacks. Hopefully, you know. Rodney was doing great. He died
Rodney
of heart
was.
Disease.
Rodney was the one I saw the most. Was he on Sober House when you were there, or no?
No. It was.
So who was the cast? Say, I always forget.
Dennis Rodman.
Oh my goodness.
Heidi Fleiss, Tom Sizemore, Seth Shifty.
Oh yeah. How's Shifty? You talk to him at all?
Bob? I have not spoken to him in years.
I see him walking sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh, you know who's doing well? Andy is sober.
Andy Dick's doing
sober.
Good.
Yeah.
Was he in that house? Because you were in the house with the swimming pool underneath of it, right?
Yes. Yes.
We had Mike Starr.
Oh, there you go.
Sally, I loved. And we had Carrie Ann and Shifty and Jenny.
Were you on the show when Carrie Ann spit in the girl's face?
Yes.
The tech's face? Were you standing there? What was that? Was that?
I was not, I was there when she hit the cameraman and all kinds of other fun stuff.
Carrie Ann, whenever she was bad, it was always because of stimulants. I'm telling you.
Well, yes. I mean, I think she was. Well, she had prescribed medication.
Right. Adderall. That's what I'm saying. And unbelievable that how that fucked her up.
But
so
she was 19, right? How old was she? Because top when Adderall is not supposed to affect the brain? That was the argument Horasti had with me.
Please. But Kendra, I'm having two sort of flashbacks to your experience. One was that night when Tom blew up and how that affected you.
Yeah, that was really hard.
Yeah, I don't know if you and I have talked about this, but Tom had a violent outburst.
I've seen it.
Yeah. And
well, I think it was that Heidi was picking at him constantly throughout the
that's
time.
Right. No, that's
and
right.
And finally it erupted.
It erupted big. I mean, he threw stuff all over the place. And I had a bad feeling that night. I was getting calls from Jimenez, from Jennifer, and I said, I'm coming over. I'm just coming over. I just something's not right. And I went over and I came, there was this big steep,
driveway.
And I came up that driveway and I heard this roaring, and I saw people jumping off the balcony. It was sound guys. It was sound guys and stuff. It was the craziest thing. I ran in there. And there was Tom, and poor Kendra was in the corner just trying to deal. After this,
I had just shut down.
Yeah, complete shutdown.
Yeah.
And which was fine, but you were the one I felt the worst for that whole outburst. And Tom, I was just glad I could come in to keep him from going further. You know, I mean, like, come on.
Yeah, it was crazy. And then the thing I loved about you is that no matter what, the cameras on, cameras off, like, you were there. Something was going on. You'd show up in the middle of the night, like, I don't think a lot of people realize that. And people ask me still, like,
doctors in real rehab don't do that. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they'll ask me even still, like, is he just like that for TV? Is it whatever? And I'm like, no, man, he was there. So,
and then I had another, what was the other thing I was thinking with Kendra? Oh, this is actually a kind of a funny thing, Kendra, I have with you.
Uh-oh.
Is when we came and, I don't remember if we went on TV or not, but we came and did a home visit for you.
I recall.
And we're like, what's all this Xanax doing here? And what about this? You're like, oh, no, that's something. We're like, what?
I'm like, no, that doesn't count, though.
she was like, well, of course, the doctor's prescribing that for me. That's my doctor gives me that.
Got a fly.
Yeah, he was like, do you have anything at the house? I'm like, no, I don't.
And, well, you were so upset when I wanted to take it away from you. I was like,
I was very upset. Very, very upset because I didn't think that stuff counted.
Oh, my God.
So let's get into the real deal. How is being pregnant, how is having children, how does it affect the way that you perceive yourself and your need for drugs and sex and all the things that you were coping with before? Because I believe it profoundly changes
people. Oh, yes,
people.
Of course.
Well, my son is adopted.
Oh, really?
So I suppose in a lot of ways I had to have a lot more determination because I had to go through a year of an adoption process.
Yeah, you had to become a foster parent, right?
Yeah.
That's a nightmare in L.A. County. It's a nightmare.
And all kinds of crazy stuff. And so it was a very intense time. We were going to parenting classes and therapy and all kinds of stuff like that. And
that's great.
So I suppose on that level, I had to work a lot harder for it.
Maybe they should do that for all people that are having
I'm just thinking that.
I think they should. Because it was intense. But But on the flip side of that, having my son every day reminds me of the person that I have to be for him to not have the childhood or adulthood that I, you know, that I had. So it really keeps me grounded that I have to.
How do you bottle that and put it into a pill?
Not everyone has that insight that she has, you know.
I have to.
Yeah.
I look at this little face and I think of life without him and I can't even imagine it.
And yeah, you know, one of the weird things about Kendra is she was living in the same town where I went to college. And my son went to college there too, Kendra.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
Vanderbilt.
I remember, I think one time you actually ran into Lucas at the airport going to visit him or something.
That was actually Nashville. Yeah. We were going to Nashville. But no, but I went to Amherst College. Didn't you live in Amherst or something?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I grew up in Massachusetts.
That's so crazy to me. And you were there when I was there. And I think you were like a kid going through all this horrible stuff.
Yeah.
When I was there in college.
It's crazy how the world kind of works, you know?
Yeah.
And intertwines us all.
The other thing we were talking about is, Bob, you're talking about white males and hopelessness and how much better we think women are doing generally. but some of this is the inspiration of being a mother, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that we have kind of a natural maternal instinct where it's like we know sometimes that it's, you know, it's make it or break it, where men kind of don't have that as much, maybe.
We don't go to the mat the same way, yeah.
Yeah, you know, where it's like...
Men aren't bonded when they get older to their kids.
Not that they don't love their kids, but I feel like they can just kind of
disconnect. It's a different level.
They're not as bonded.
It's more than bonding. It's almost like women have a selflessness with this whole thing that, you know, that just men don't have.
They separate themselves, men, more from their kids, or... They don't feel that responsibility, you're saying?
I don't know. I just saw.
All I know is a lot of the sober women friends in my life got affected in a profound way by having children, whereas the men, not so much. Not so much at all.
Yeah.
Right?
I think we stay more connected to our nurturing and emotional side, maybe, than men do.
Yep. And this sort of makes that all come to life a little bit.
Yeah, because I know when I look at him, and I even if I find myself saying something and then I feel kind of bad about it, then I think back about what my mom or my dad said, and I don't really think men do that as much, you know?
So you did therapy. Did you have trauma work ever? Is that
I sure did, and I went to meetings, and I did. You know, I worked hard to be at a place where I could be a good mom. That was the most important thing to me. It's all I wanted to be in life. You know, so.
But this goes back to that issue. Remember that thing that was circulating around about addiction is all about trauma, or addiction is all about being bonded to other people. I mean, we've always known that those are core issues in the addiction process.
I think that's how you sustain it. But how you get it, I don't know.
Yeah. And so what kind of trauma treatment do you have, Kendra? Trauma. Because you had a lot of trauma growing up. Did you have specific therapy for that, the trauma?
Physical abuse and sexual abuse, PTSD, anxiety, you know, the works. I got it. Still working my way through it. I don't think it's something you're ever really completely over.
Did you have like EMDR or anything like that?
I started a little bit, and actually when I was even there, that was something that Jill and I were talking a lot about.
Yeah.
And kind of trying to work into. I didn't do a lot of EMDR, but it was something that we did a little bit. Mostly what I did was could just go to therapy. I mean,
just
really
individual
talk about it and just
focused, emotionally focused therapy.
And focus on my marriage.
But you said the key thing, which is it never ends. It's an constant evolution. But America wants solutions.
Yeah.
They want absolutes. And with trauma, there is no absolutes. It affects you one way. It affects another person exactly opposite way. How you evolve out of it, what coping skills you learn that are productive or destructive. Each person is so complex, and everybody wants a simple 6-month, 3-day, 30-day prescription solution to these profound problems of personality, of trauma, of sex. It's just we need to be more honest about that. We're all just trying to get better. You have to acknowledge that you're fucked up and you don't want to be fucked up anymore, and try to head towards health.
The coping mechanism thing, that was the biggest thing for me, was finding other ways to deal when I was getting, you know, upset, or when I was, you know, getting depressed or anxiety, finding other ways to deal with it than going and, you know, drinking myself into a stupor or taking Xanax or doing whatever, finding other outlets. That was very...
Do you understand what I'm saying, though?
Oh, yeah. Listen, I know.
And the idea to me, I judge my clients mostly on functionability. If they're becoming more functional in society, in life, in interpersonal relationships, and the setbacks with drugs and alcohol are to be expected. But here's the thing. Most clients stay abstinent and don't get better and don't sign up for anything.
That's right.
And that everybody's going, that person's a success. Whereas somebody who's relapsed two or three times, who really is being honest and core opening up, is much more headed towards health than someone who remains abstinent and just keeps their mouth shut.
But I can just, in the few minutes we have with Kendra here, I can tell the PTSD stuff is way down.
Yeah.
Way down.
Just that it's an ongoing process.
That you're closer to people when you are with them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
More present, more close.
Yeah, I try to stay present pretty much all the time in my feelings. And at least, you know, I'm by no means perfect. I make mistakes. I screw up. I have setbacks. I do all kinds of things, you know, but at the end of the day, the important thing for me is acknowledging them when I do them.
Yeah.
And then acting on it. Like, you know, why did I do it? You know, exploring why I did it, how I can do it differently next time, what I can do better. You know, I'm never going to be perfect.
And then the recovery community would sort of add on to exactly what Kendra's saying, things like cleaning up your side of the street and expressing gratitude for what you do. You know, there's things you can do to sort of continue to work your way through those things. Kendra, any more contact with Duncan?
Duncan, no, I haven't spoken to him since we did the show. We hung out for a little bit afterwards, and our lives just were not.
Is that the drummer guy?
No, it was a British guy that had won like an Academy, the equivalent of the British Academy Award for
which
directing.
Was the drummer guy?
Drummer guy.
Wasn't there a drummer guy?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
He was Vallone, living in
Phil Vallone.
He was living in my apartment building. You know that I ended up subletting Jenny's apartment on Franklin and Cherokee. And then that guy lived in the building, too, the Phil guy.
Yeah, Duncan lived there as well.
Oh, Duncan lived there.
Wasn't that the sex addict show, that guy?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, now wait a minute. So the Duncan guy is the one that lived in my building, not the Phil guy.
Okay. Duncan, the British guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, things were evolution with him.
Yeah. Oh no, I know he was not. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I wondered if anybody.
I had one of the weirdest experiences in my life in front of that building. I didn't know the guy, and everybody assumes I know the guy, and so I'm walking out, and this AA guy's going, "You live here, Bob?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he goes, "That dude from Dr. Drew lives here." And I was like, "Dude, I could tell by his tone." And the guy's girlfriend was up for the. In the apartment doing something.
Oh my goodness.
There's all kinds of stuff goes on, but it's a constant evolution.
Let's just suffice it to say we were in different directions.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I don't know what happened to poor Duncan.
Well, I know what happened one day.
I don't want to hear it. I really don't want to hear it.
Oh, so she was both on the celebrity.
She did the sober house. Because there was some substances there, as always.
But also, you know, Jenny, sexual addiction.
Yeah,
one?
Yeah.
Okay, I remember.
And Kendra, Jenny had to come clean about the substances too eventually. It's interesting how that becomes a bigger picture as everything becomes clearer. No?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you know how Jenny always said she used to masturbate to Law and Order? So I'm in that apartment, and I love Law and Order. And anytime it played, I thought of her.
Oh, man.
Dun, dun.
Oh, that's crazy. Well, Kendra, listen, we just want to touch base with you. It's just so good to see you and see you thriving.
I love you guys. I am so happy to see you.
Oh.
You know, it's just really so good.
You know, just to see you doing well is just amazing.
Back in L.A.
Say hi to your husband for
us. I will, absolutely. Yeah,
last time my son was literally on that plane on the way to Nashville. So
yeah, he's doing really good, too. He's doing awesome.
Well, you know, my wife, Susan, was listening to his music. This guy's awesome. He's great. I love it. Right?
Yeah, here she is. Really great.
You know, she's bringing her. She goes, you got to see how Kendra's
play
husband.
Some. Play some. Nate will find it and edit it
Does your son ever watch Handy Manny?
Bob, I think you would really like it. As
oh, no, I was on a preschool show, Tools That Talk, so maybe he knows me from there.
Oh, it was
I was
Fred.
In Monkey Wrench. Hi, Manny, I'm scared. What shows
we,
us?
We watch Handy Manny all the time.
Oh, I'm telling him I'm the nervous Monkey Wrench. You know the Monkey Wrench? Oh, no. You watch Handy Manny?
They do, yeah. All right, listen, we got to rock. We're going to take a quick break.
Later.
But
okay,
thanks,
bye.
Kendra. Bye.
All right, guys. Thank
all
you
right,
so
thank
much.
You so
all right,
much.
See you soon.
Bye. All right, bye. Bye.
This Life this with life. Dr. Drew and
yep.
Bob Forrest.
Wrapping up. Fred, thank you for being a part of this. Fun.
Thank you again. Very, again, anything you guys, just brilliant.
It's fun.
I like learning through osmosis, so I appreciate this.
Fred asks great questions, doesn't he?
Well, so now you know if you got HIV or cancer, you got a better chance of success.
Are people
of,
more
of survival than you do of addiction?
Are people lax going, hey, look at Magic Johnson, I'm not going to have a condom? Is there a problem? I'm not saying that to be funny.
Well, no, the exposure rate is bad.
Yeah,
people are doing that.
Yes. Gonorrhea, they're actually blaming something called pre-exposure prophylaxis, which you can take the antiviral before you have sex and prevent the transmission now. So people are blaming
that. Is
that.
Alarmed.
They're not as alarmed. They're taking pre-exposure prophylaxis. They're going without the
There
condom.
Should be
and
no
guess
more
what?
Exposure.
Massive increase in gonorrhea, syphilis, and chlamydia right now. Massive. And then herpes and warts, of course, will follow in the heels of that.
But understand that there should be no more spread of the disease because there's so much awareness, but there is. But if you're exposed to the disease, there is a high survival rate now.
Yeah.
Right? Living with AIDS.
Right.
But addiction, the death rate is doubling every 5 years.
Let me ask you one last question. All this stuff. Again, I'm just talking out of my hat, as they say, but it seems with addiction, either you die. This doesn't seem to lie to be a lot of six-year-old junkies that either you would have died by then if you kept doing it.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yes.
Yes. For the most part, when it comes to IV drug use, You do not reach your fifth decade if you don't get sober.
Yeah.
So even like
generally speaking,
coke and all that.
Scott Weiland was 48.
So
he was going to die within the next 2 years if he didn't stop.
And he's another one that I think, like Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Old was Philip Seymour Hoffman? Late 40s, mid 40s. Yeah.
But they seemed like they were clean for years, and just because they said I could just do one thing, you know what I mean? It shocks the heart.
No, that's not what happened with Scott, nor with, in my opinion, my guess with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
I thought he was dry for like 20 years.
Doctors put him on meds. Adderall was at his bedside, Bob.
Yeah.
Someone put him on a medicine not understanding what it does to addiction.
Uh-huh.
Boom, his disease comes on. Scott Weiland died of Suboxone and Klonopin.
But the addicts are complicit in it.
Yeah.
Don't forget
that.
So anyways, drug addicts. So let's just wrap this up.
Sure.
If you are a drug addict, HIV positive, and you have cancer, you're most likely to get killed by addiction.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. That is crazy.
By a large percentage, by a very large margin. And people
see,
don't understand
that. When I just said that, people don't believe that.
Yeah, they don't believe it.
Like I said, the fact just, like I said, you don't hear of people in their 50s or 60s and then had a rehab. Either they got clean or they would have died.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for listening to the This Life podcast. You can check out thislifepodcast.com. You can find the podcast there as well as at iTunes and podbayfm.com. And a reminder still that this is a Playroom Pods production. Also, if you want to support it, please go to drdrew.com and click through on the Amazon banner. That helps us out too. Doesn't cost you a thing, but keeps a little wind in the sails here. And we really do appreciate your support. And it's been too fun, Fred, as always. And
thank you
Kendra
so
Rossi
much
for visiting us.
She was great.
At Kendra Jade Rossi is her Twitter handle. You can check her
and
out
her
there.
Her little boy.
And her husband, Lucas Rossi.
Let's hear some of his music going out.
We will go out with that.
Bye.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you lied to me to go over everything. You say time's supposed to heal ya, but I ain't done much healing. Hello, can you hear me? I'm in California dreaming about who we used to be when we were younger. free. I've forgotten how it felt before the world fell out of feet. It's such a difference between us and a million miles. So typical of me to talk about myself. I'm sorry. I hope that you're well. Did you ever make it out of that town where nothing ever happened? It's no secret that the both of our eyes are running.